We're here at Menards Bag Sale, asking shoppers what they're putting in the bag to get 15% off.
Paint,
batteries,
tools,
toilet paper,
extension cords, grocery items,
hardware for my cabinets,
snack items, crackers, and some canned good stuff,
shop vac supplies,
toothpaste, cereal, coffee, dog treats. I've got a lot of stuff to grab.
The list goes on, but the sale ends January 24th. Hurry in for Menards 15% off bag sale. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello and welcome to Springboard, your venture investing. My name is Albert Okran, welcoming you to Ghana's foremost developmental program and that place where the greatest minds in the world converge. Springboard is brought to you by the Springboard Roadshow Foundation in partnership with MTN Ghana, the Enterprise Group, and the Ghana Growth Program, a collaboration between MasterCard Foundation and Springboard. Today we mark 17 years of consistently convening every week to discuss, reflect, project, think about a better world, a better continent, and a better nation. These conversations have run for 17 years nonstop, and to God alone be the glory. Today we reflect once again on artificial intelligence. It's become such a big part of our lives, or has it? We've had two conversations with Spikey on AI for all and then AI for business. Today we push on to touch on AI for agriculture and how to boost Ghana's food security. For context, we continuously face challenges to food security such as climate change, irregular rainfall, rising population, pest infestation, and some very basic issues that we should be grappling with much better than we seem to be doing. How can this new technology or algorithm help us to be on top of what we do? I have just the right person for this conversation. Ghana Card Purposes is called Francis Obrikran, CEO and founder of Agro Center. But for all of you who know and should know, he's the man, Black Kofi. So, Chairman, good to see you.
Good to see you too, and it's a pleasure being here.
Right. So, let's start with Aptiq. From where you sit,
right,
and this is not a scientific poll, but
sure,
from where you sit, how well have we responded to the opportunity AI provides? Let's talk about Ghana.
Okay.
Would you say we are 20%, 30, 40, just a random number?
So for Ghana, I think I'll put us around 5 to 6%.
Oh, Charlie.
Yeah. And I think when it comes to AI, in most cases, what I see a lot of Ghanaians using is the ChatGPT, the DeepSeek, to do a lot of reference check, etc. But AI goes beyond that. There's a lot of, and I've seen a few content creators use it to create some videos, even though the videos are still not in its 100% shape. The world has advanced significantly. There are a lot of AI activities happening. And if you look at the usage, I would say maybe 5 to 6%. But there's a potential to grow into something very big.
Before going to Agric, some of these technologies are meant to be leveless. If I say leveless, I mean we are in a race in which, significantly in almost every area of endeavor, we are several years or miles behind other parts of the world. A technology like this is supposed to be a leveler to bring us rapidly up to speed. Why are we not catching on? Is it fear? Is it inertia? What's the whole
thing? So I think I would put that on inertia. We can see that from growing up. When technologies come, most people in sub-Saharan Africa take time to catch up.
Why?
One, because it takes time for us to understand it. Two, it has to do with cultural elements. There are some cultural identities that people think, they call it a white wizard. Anything that comes from a white man that looks superior, they think is wizardry. So sometimes the cultural elements does not allow us to be able to adopt it. Sometimes also it's religion. Religion also would want us to take us a step back in some of these technologies that comes in. So always we want to see it's progressing. When social media came, a lot of people thought it was part of the devil's activities.
I played back some statements
about social media. Now it's become one of the levels where even every business, so if you're not even on social media, I think you are out of whatever it is. People have been able to run successful business on social media. A lot of business have been born out of social media. So imagine if we had the same misconception. And it's what is happening now. It's a fear of people not understanding what AI is. So It's like when it's in this fable, Aesop fable, the fox and the grape. When the fox wanted to get the grapes and he couldn't get it, he said, maybe the grapes is sour anyway. Nobody's going to eat it, but you've not tasted it. So it's more of that what we see, the fear of using apprehension that comes on our part that is really, and it's also being used by most young people. I think the older generation, the born before computers, etc., people are very skeptical about what AI is and even how to use it. So that's some of the fear factors that come into adopting and using AI on a very big scale in Ghana.
So the invariable end product or result is that by the time you get on board, others would have gone way ahead of you. And then the same gap emerges again. So even the opportunity to bridge the gap seems to be lost because of slow uptake.
Even the gap is widening. If it comes to technology, the gap widens every second. And so imagine if we take about 2 years to get that. In technology years, that's even about 100 years. So that is a long span in between us adopting and then where the rest of the world will be in terms of AI usage.
If you ask me any question about governance, any question about national priority, I'll tell you that for me, any day, I'll go back to General Champon's ownership. Right. So not in the sense of the policy and its implementation, but the thinking that says a people must be able to feed themselves. Simple. So let's bring AI into the world of food security. Right. And let's start with even engaging the issues of application of AI. We've looked at various industries, touched a bit on them, but let's deal today largely with agri. What are some of the exciting things happening in agri? Who knows? That means we'll get something today.
Yeah. I think if you look at the agricultural sector, there's a lot of uptake in AI activities in some of the European and advanced markets, mainly because that's where AI is coming from. So definitely. One is it has to do with what we call climate smart agricultural activities. If you take the rainfall pattern, for example, you and I have been around for quite a long time. We see that the rainfall pattern has changed significantly. In the past, by March, April, we should have a lot of rains. Farmers go to the farm, they plant, and they were very sure that by May, June, July, they should have rains. Now it doesn't happen. It rains up to somewhere in July, it stops, and then comes back in September, it rains for a few months and it stops. A lot of the farmers cannot do any prediction again. So they go, they plant, and there's a lot of droughts.
So they work with speculation?
Now it's speculation, because even our weather forecast system is still based on speculation. They tell us today to rain. I think for the past 2 weeks, it's been very cloudy. There's no rain. And it's the same thing happening in a lot of agricultural regions across the country. Farmers can no longer predict. But with AI now, a lot of intelligence is going into some of this prediction, making it very accurate. I was in, I think, United States for a few months, and you can see that the weather update on the iPhone is different from when it's in Ghana here. It will tell you the time it's going to start raining, the minutes and the second it will rain. It will tell you how long it's going to rain for, and then the rain stops. So it will tell you the rain is going to start at 12 o'clock. By 12:15, it's going to stop, and exactly it's going to stop at that point. Here, we tell you it's going to rain today. Nobody knows when it's going to come. So definitely one of the key things is climate smart agriculture, where AI is playing a key role in making sure that the kind of content and data that goes out to smaller farmers is very accurate so that farmers can plan. Instead of telling farmers that we might have rainfall today, why don't you become very specific? At 12:45 p.m., the southern sector will have rain that will last for 30 minutes. So the farmer knows that when I wake up in the morning, even if I leave the house at 10 a.m., by 11, I'm at the farm waiting for the rain to come. So that is one of the key things that is happening in terms of using AI to do a lot of predictive analysis to be able to ensure that the kind of data that goes out to the end consumer, as the farmers, is very accurate. So that's one thing that's happening on that side. Another also has to do what we call credit scoring. If you take agriculture, for example, it's in the informal sector. A lot of farmers don't have data on what they do. We don't know how much a farmer earns in a year. The average yield a farmer cultivates in a year. It's all speculative. You ask a farmer, he tell you, I'm doing 1 acre. Go ahead and measure the farm. You find out it's actually 1.5 or even 2 acres. Then they tell you that they are agric 4 acre. I don't know. So even they have a difference between traditional acreage and agric acreage. But an acre is an acre. So one of the key things is looking at building some form of alternative credit score of smaller farmers. When these farmers go to, let's say, the banks and say, I need a loan to be able to go and buy inputs, the banks will say, okay, you work in the informal sector. You are not like the government worker where month on month we can tell how much money they receive. So how much money do you have, or what do you sell in a cycle? The farmer, they don't know that. But if the farmer was on a platform that uses AI analysis, all the farmers' activities will be well documented, and then we'll create some form of credit score for a smaller farmer where all these financial institutions will leverage on. So, okay, farmer A, for the 2025 period, did 2 acres of cultivation, harvested maybe 2 metric tons, sold it for 5,000 cedis. This is the profit margin, this is the production cost. So you can do all this data analysis to be able to see that this is somebody if we give money to, the person that is liable to pay back. So those are some of the key interesting activities AI is playing in the agricultural sector.
Well, so how do we erase the perception? And I've been heavily involved in perception change for years. And what we've done for the past couple of years has been just revising people's thinking about the sector. Right. Because the average person, and I would include myself growing up, would never even have considered a career in anything agri-related. When you say agri-center, I'm saying, that's agri.
Yeah.
I mean, growing up, it wouldn't have been your first choice career option. Yeah. How do we use what these technologies are doing to revise the thinking about these sectors?
Yeah. So I think, yes, definitely perception also plays a very key role in the agri sector. And it's been either something that has been, we've thought through it, we've really made it look the norm, or it's something that we do unconsciously. If, for example, you go on Google right now and type smallholder farmer in Ghana, trust me, you're going to see a very old man with a hole on the neck going to the farm.
Happily.
Happily. Or you find a woman who is cultivating groundnut, very old person. And there's very nothing exciting about it for young people. We've made a great look like it's, and even when we're in secondary school, when you do something bad, what they tell you, go and weed.
Yeah.
That's a great. Let's take them to the school farm. Let's go. So a great has been conceived in a form of punishment for people when we're growing up. So a lot of young people will finish a great college. They want to work in a bank. No offense to the banks. People want to move away from the agri sector because they've seen it traditionally being very for old people, not a lot of money involved. But then we can tell that a lot of people have changed that narrative and working in some of these sectors where they are earning very good money. So it has to do with how we change that perception of agri is not for old people. There are various activities you can perform within the value chain. That's why we call it the value chain. It's very long. You might not be interested in doing production. You might say, okay, I finished a great college. I want to do extension services. How do I add technology to the extension service I give to farmers? The farmers are in the rural areas, they might not be well informed. You have been to school. Based on these key things, you can learn a lot on the internet using AI and tell the farmers that these are the new trends of farming. Even how do you do climate smart agriculture? How do you plan to ensure that even with minimal rainfall that coming, you can still cultivate? So it has to be a conscious effort where we change the mindset. Anyway, it has to do with a lot of imagery. We have to change where agri is always old people. And it happens a lot. If there's any government program, you find an old man with a hole on the shoulder of a woman, then we put on billboards and that would have the young people away.
Let's go into access and affordability.
Right.
Because when all is said and done, I think that if you had a critical mass of people doing what you describe in other jurisdictions in Ghana, and we showcase them on our platforms, it would be great.
Yeah.
So if you had, let's say, Kujakutu Buati, select a group of people who are doing agriculture and technology, and we consistently showcase what they are doing, the world will say, okay, let's sit up. I think there's something.
Yeah.
But that's one part of it.
Yeah.
But for the smallholder farmer still somewhere, whose keyword is survival?
Survival, yes.
How do we bring these technologies to their doorstep?
Right.
How do we make it accessible and affordable for them?
So I think for us, for AgroCenter, we've been working for close to about 8 years with smaller farmers. We are a technology company. And we are always mindful when we are introducing technology to smaller farmers. Where you meet a lot of resistance and pushback, it's the smaller farmers.
Why?
One, because they don't understand it. That system is owned by the government. And they've made sure that that is where all the technology comes in. So let's say I go to Kenya, for example, and I want to deploy AgroCenter. In Ghana, what I have to do is I have to deploy what we call field agents. These agents will have my proprietary mobile application. They go to the farmers, they begin the onboarding, they take farmer data, etc. But in Kenya and Tanzania, etc., the government has already done the legwork of getting all farmer data. So if I need to deploy a solution, I already have the existing data. I just build on that. Here is a lot of work because you have to build the rails yourself. You have to build the bridges yourself to get to the smaller farmers. So countries like East Africa, as you mentioned, one has to do with policy. Two, government involvement, also bringing a lot of private stakeholder activities to ensure that all the bottlenecks, because for example, if I want to, let's say, do payment to smaller farmers, I might end up building 5 or 6 solutions that will enable payment to get to a smaller farmer. I might not get to the set one and I'll stop. But the government builds from 1 to 5, and I just jump on the 6. It makes my work as a startup very easy because I'm going to use less capital, less resources to be able to get to the service. So that is what those in East Africa are doing quite differently, because they have already built the foundation, the building blocks, of which is easy to now overlay technology. So a critical example is, I have a friend who is giving farmers information, climate smart information. And what he does is he uses local languages to be able to do this. He's in Kenya. Because he already has, he have the exist where the farmers are located, the language they speak, their primary mobile numbers, all the things. It's easier for him to pick that data and then pick that. Okay, I want to send, let's say, to farmers who speak Swahili in this location. He can just look at the data set and extract that and then quickly be able to deploy. So whatever services, already the building blocks are there, and then it's easier to now build. It's like when you're building a house, the foundation is difficult, but to raise to lentil level, when you buy 2,000 blocks, you get to lentil level immediately. So that's how other countries are doing things differently, because of the involvement of governments, other private stakeholders who have built the initial rails for businesses to run on faster and quicker.
Summarize what you think the policy initiatives or intervention should be that will enable us to get to that level, because I've been to Kenya, and I admire what they've done with agriculture, and they've overlaid tourism on it. They are so confident.
Yep.
When you go to an agribusiness or agricultural venture in Kenya, they're so proud of what they're doing, and they can really sell it to you.
Yeah.
And somebody's doing something smaller, but you pay to go and see it, because they're so proud of what they are selling, and they've created a story around it.
Mm-hmm.
How do we lay that policy foundation?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, enumerate what you think
any
policymaker listening should pay attention to
as a base
to build on.
It's good you mentioned what Kenya is doing. If I say Kenya, the first thing that comes to your mind is safari, is tourism. Kenya has one of the biggest natural activities in it. So what they do is they've been able to do what we call a bundled service approach.
Okay.
Instead of selling you just agri sector, they sell you everything as a package. Okay, once you come to my farm, you get potatoes. 5 minutes away, there's a tourist destination you can visit. Let's take Afram Plains, for example. If you've been to Afram Plains before, if you use a quail route to get to Afram Plains, there's an exciting view where you go through the mountains, you descend, and then you go across a ferry. I can tell you for a fact that less than 5% of Ghanaians have actually traveled on a ferry before. If you have no business activity doing that, you might not go there. Why don't you sell it such a way that Afram Plains is one of the largest bread baskets in the country? They produce, Afram Plains can produce about 60% of our needs, agricultural needs, because the lands are very flat, very fertile, and also access to water is not a problem, because we have the water lake cutting across the entire Afram Plains, so to be through irrigation is not a problem. Why don't you sell it such a way that, okay, we package it as, we go to, let's say, Ministry of Tourism, Ministry of Agri, we come up with something that, okay, if you have an acre of farmland in Afram Plains, these are the other benefits. These are, you can see the water lake, you can do a boat cruise, you can do a boat ride, you can cross a ferry, you can see some of the caves and the mountains, etc. So it's a whole package what the East Africans have done to sell you something, not just agri. But if I say agri, you say, okay, I'm just going to a farm. But the journey to get to the farm is what we are selling to you, because you go to several nice location, just like going to the north. People bypass the Mole Park, they bypass even the monkey sanctuary, etc. But if we say, okay, these are the services you can get alongside what you are doing, it will really spark interest in not just alive. Okay, if it's the moment they say farm, it comes to your mind that we are going to a rural community, walk several miles to a certain place. Imagine even doing some of the big farms that we have, even if you have go-karts, that should take people in there. If you have even those on the farm place, doing jet ski and all those things will really bring a lot of participatory approach than just singling out the farming activities, because people will not be interested. Okay, I'm going to the farm, I'm going to see maize, I'm going to see yam. I want to eat it. I want to see. That's how we are able to. Those are some of the key things we can look at to be able to get over the kind of isolation we've put agri in a single bucket in Ghana here.
Let's talk about storytelling.
Yeah.
Because if somebody from these jurisdictions I mentioned is designing a tourism package for you, the way they describe it, even upfront, the way they will tell the story, even if you will picture it before you get there, say, wow, I must see this. How can storytelling help us to create what you just described?
Right.
That integrated package and that thing that you want to see. Mm-hmm. And we'll come back to what the role of AI, storytelling.
Yeah.
How can storytelling help us push agriculture forward?
It would do a lot. If you take, let's say if you take Dubai, for example, people say Dubai. The moment Dubai, they say Dubai, you picture skyscrapers, you picture desert safari, you picture, Dubai is a very small, Dubai is even like, it's one of the Emirates. And I think the UAE has about 7 or 8 Emirates, Dubai and then the rest, but Dubai stands tall because they've been able to put themselves out there in a very storytelling manner, where what you just described. We don't mind the heat because Dubai is hotter than Ghana. Dubai's temperatures are hit as far as 40 degrees Celsius when you're there. But I've never heard people say I'm hot in Dubai, because they are so enchanted by what they see, and then they forget the heat and everything. Storytelling can play a key role in what is how we get people to be able to visit. The more you hammer something in somebody's head, it sticks. And the more you're able to portray visual storytelling using, and it has to be consistent over time.
And intentional.
Intentional. We don't do that here. And what I've seen is I think it's a Ghanaian thing. When we have something, even though it's good, Ghanaians always want to be modest. So if you compare ourselves to the Nigerians will sell you everything. Even if you have the same thing, they'll sell you there. So we are very modest about how we tell our own story. We think, okay, if I say too much, so I'm bragging me too, no, since anything. So it has to be intentional storytelling approach because we have a lot of natural resources that we can use to do a story. If I go on Visit Ghana website, for example, I can count the number of videos I can see. And a lot of even the content that I produce on Ghana are done by foreigners. Maybe they came for a year of return. They did some videos they put on YouTube. Even photography itself, we should commission people to do intentional storytelling through photography. Tour the whole country, take pictures of key agricultural areas to be able to display to people. Okay, this is what we have in the country. And to promote a lot of these things. So it has to be very intentional, curated, and systematic.
Again, I come back to the gap theory that I've been propounding for some time now. Black coffee. If AI thrives on primary data, if I went and typed exciting tourist activities in Africa, and we have not fed our pictures, our destinations, our story, it will show me South Africa. Definitely. It will show me Egypt. Definitely. It will show me Morocco. Definitely. It will show me Kenya.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the origin, the source, the danger in not putting our content out there.
Yeah. So I think people think AI works in vacuum. AI doesn't work in vacuum. AI picks whatever data you put out there. If I ask AI to write me a proposal on agri-finance, what AI is going to do is going to pick several topics, several written, published proposals, and then pick salient points and then just add them together for me. And these were written by people. So the initial data sets have to be provided by people. As you mentioned, if you type tourist place in Africa, it will show maybe Egypt, because one, pyramid is there, two, other things. So we have, as you mentioned, we have to be intentional about setting up the primary data sets. How do we put in all this thing that will make AI to be able to override it? Once something about, so if you take, for example, if you say cocoa production, Ghana is number two now. I'm going to show you Ivory Coast. Because the government is very intentional about cocoa production in Ivory Coast. They've flooded the internet with pictures, policies, etc. So it will pick this thing and show that, okay, Cote d'Ivoire is, maybe Ghana might have overtaken it, but because they have all this data, it will still put Cote d'Ivoire as number one. So we have to set up the initial data sets, put in the key things that we need to see. Even it has to do with agri. If you ask me to mention top five commercial farms in Ghana, it will be difficult for me, because everybody's doing something, but they're doing their own silos, small, but what if there was a system that had created all these things? Even if you ask me, the total number of smaller farmers in Ghana is estimated, we say 3 million. Nobody has actually measured or counted people to see. We don't even know. If you ask me for geographical breakdown, it would be terrible. I can't tell you where they are located, because the initial data set is just missing. And if you go to the government institutions who are supposed to drive this, they will actually be asking, do you have the data? They don't even have it to give to you in the first place.
This is Springboard Immersion University, and it's the AI conversation now veering into the heartbeat of our lives, agriculture. And really, I mean, when you say agriculture, I think it even doesn't do enough justice. We are answering the simple question about food security. How do we ensure that today, tomorrow, next 10 years, we can continue to feed ourselves? There are a number of predictions that if certain variables do not change, there's a global food crisis looming. How can AI, how can data, how can technology insulate us from what the whole world seems to be concerned about? And that's my conversation with Black Coffee, the man they call Francis Okran. When I come back from this break, let's go into where do we start from? Yeah. What do we do next? And are there some bright spots of exciting things that AgriCenter has picked up on your travels that we can see? Okay, that's one example we can look at and see it can be done.
Yeah.
And once we can do that, you can then begin to map the way forward. Let's go for a break. When we come back, let's take this apart a bit more. Please don't go away.
Yafimi give us the vibe. Now, Ensure Not Chili makes you thrive.
Yes, it's time to enjoy, Charlie. buy or renew your motor insurance, and boom! Free four coupons and airtime for your sweat. Who don't like enjoyment?
From January to June 2025, Enterprise Insurance gives you more reasons to smile on the road. Insure today and enjoy free fuel coupons for your car and airtime for your phone.
Eh? Free fuel? Airtime too? Ha! Enterprise Insurance, always your advantage.
Insure not chilly. It's simple. Insure and enjoy. Ready to secure your peace of mind and experience the fastest claims payment? Visit any of our branches or agency outlets nationwide. Connect with your insurance broker or enjoy the convenience of buying your insurance online through the Enterprise Advantage app today. Terms and conditions apply. Enterprise, your advantage.
Hi, this is Albert Okran. This August, we celebrate 17 years of Springboard, your virtual university. This broadcast was born on the evening of 4th August 2008 when Comfort and I sat in the studios of Joy FM to discuss building the good society. Our reflections that day were on the writings of the Russian philosopher Leo Tolstoy, who wrote, "How much land does a man need?" 17 years on, and we still are reflecting on these same thoughts. How do we bring everyone on board to build the good society? It's amazing to reflect on how far we've gone with the broadcast, how many platforms it's serving people on, and how many millions across the world have been transformed by this broadcast. To God alone be the glory. We want to say a big thank you to all our partners and all our stakeholders, listeners, and viewers. You make Springboard the virtual university. To mark this special occasion, we're rolling out a series called Thinkathon, The Power of Ideas. We bring on experts from academia, business, industry, governance, students, leaders from all over to reflect on how ideas can transform our society. We have a couple of other interventions lined up for you, but this is Springboard at 17. We want to invite you to join us in these conversations and you'll be greatly inspired. Springboard, your personal value will shoot up.
Hello.
Good morning, oh. Please, am I speaking to Madam Mavis?
Morning. And Mavis, me. One year.
I am Alfred. Me, Frefi MTN. Sisiana, we notice that Obi is a wallet in him.
Jesus Christ. Me, sika my brain.
Oh, Madam. Nyabuche. Sika sena na wo wallet in him.
2,000 Ghana. Rather be wo. Yes, wo. Jesus.
Oh, no. Wait, dear. Bo, momo pino na. Yam blocky sani pano.
We're broken. Okay. Why? 9.
Auntie Mavis Jai, MTN will never call you with any number except 0244-300,000. Sure, don't entertain calls discussing your Momo wallet or claiming you've won money or gifts from MTN. Report any suspicious activity by calling 100 or using *170#. The Momo app, my MTN app, or email mmfraudteam.gh@mtn.com. Stay alert.
MTN. Vacation, give your team more than just a break. Give them the tools to lead, speak, and innovate. Teampreneurship 2025. It's a powerful 5-day experience happening from Monday 11th to Friday 15th August at Osu Ebenezer Presbyterian Hall. It's designed for teens between 12 to 17 years. From pitching bold ideas to industry visits, talent shows, and fun challenges, this is where growth meets good fun. Call 0308-255-775 to register now for free. Limited slots available. You can follow us on all our social media platforms at Ghana Grows and on YouTube at Springboard Channel. Teampreneurship is brought to you by Springboard Roadshow Foundation in partnership with MasterCard Foundation. Teampreneurship 2025. Next is now.
Welcome back to Springboard, your virtual university, and to this incredible conversation about AI, this time focusing on agriculture and food security. If you just joined us so far, we've been looking at why you just can't ignore AI if you want to farm or do agriculture at the next level, and how it's no longer a one-dimensional agricultural production process. It's an integrated
venture that includes tourism, that embraces storytelling, that involves policy, that involves bringing people into this big story. Springboard is brought to you by the Springboard Ratio Foundation in partnership with MTN Ghana, the Enterprise Group, and the Ghana Growth Program, a collaboration between the MasterCard Foundation and Springboard. And just to say that the Ghana Growth Program is mainly focused on mindset change to help especially young people to embrace agriculture and not dispel it or repel it or look down on it like Black Oshu was telling us earlier on. And so the number to call or WhatsApp if you want to find out more about the Ghana Growth Program, 0308255775. There's always some intervention taking place, something exciting that you can be part of. And it's always good to keep that number in your favorites. Talking about exciting things, we have the Teenpreneurship Program. And this is the time where young people gather to reflect on new developments in their careers, new developments in agriculture, new developments in technology. And very often these programs are paid for and tend to be expensive because it costs money to put them together. By courtesy of Ghana Grows, you can attend the Teenpreneurship Program at the Ebenezer Presby Hall from the 11th to the 15th of August. You're looking at your calendar now. Close, 11th to 15th of August. Sign up by calling the same number, 0308255775, or send me a WhatsApp just so you can be part of that bunch of young people, exciting young people, thinking about next is now. How do you find a theme? Next is now.
I think it's well thought through.
Yeah,
next is now.
Yeah, it's a very big part of that conversation.
It is now.
If I come back to you, Black Coffee, let me just encourage everyone to also subscribe to the Springboard channel on YouTube. Just go and just subscribe and just click on post notifications so that anytime we publish the next edition of any of our broadcasts, you will get your notification on your device and be part of it. Finally, to mention that the Enterprise Advantage tip for today is a simple question about the difference between home insurance and content insurance. The answer is simple. Content insurance is about the valuables in your home or the building. And then in the broader context, home insurance covers the value of the building as well as its contents. So this is brought to you by the Enterprise Group. Call them on 030-263-4777. Email info@myenterprisegroup.io. Enterprise, your advantage. Black, if we are back.
Yes.
So as part of what we do, we always push one venture. Actually, look, especially a young person trying to invest in agribusiness and just surprise somebody and just mention their name and their phone number and what they do.
Yeah.
And sometimes they can get so much sales, they have to restock.
And it's a
life-changing thing. It is a small thing in the world.
It does.
So let's highlight Quench Natural Juice. They say if you are tired of sugary drinks, switch to Quench Natural Juice made from real fruits. No sugar, no preservatives, pure refreshing goodness delivered to your home, your office, your restaurant, or your hotel to nourish your body and impress your guests. The number to call, 054-598-4061. And that is Quench Natural Juice. I pray that they will do well just by this mention and push their business for a small. So back to AI.
Yes.
Let's start with the infrastructure, but also the foundation that will help us to be bigger players than your 5% gave me a lot of grief. If we are not doing well in terms of our uptake, 5% is not good enough. We should be somewhere up there in the 60s, 70s and climbing. Let's start with the primary data. How do we ensure that when you go to an AI and say, show me an example from Ghana, or at least Ghana would feature in the examples that will be shown to anybody across the world looking for any kind of query, especially in the area of agriculture.
So I think, as I mentioned, the primary data set is everything that is a game changer, because the more data you have on activities you perform, the more AI is able to pick and then use for its analysis. If let's say country A has about 5,000 data sets and country B has about 1,000 data sets, who wins? It's definitely country A, because they have variable data to be able to pick from.
For the benefit of somebody who's saying, what is data set? Or better still, if I want to contribute, where do I upload them? Do I upload them on the website? Do I upload them on my Facebook page, my Twitter account? where do I go? How can I contribute? And what are data sets?
So you can contribute in diverse ways. AI picks from multiple sources.
Like
social media is one. So tourist attraction locations in Ghana. Locations, especially GPS, what they do, photography, images, etc. If we go into also, let's say, even social welfare, we've mapped out all those. We go to Agric, we've done all this mapping to ensure that once all these are in place, now it's easier now to expose this data to any AI activity that we perform, and then to build on that. But once the data set is missing, it will do a lot of what we call guesswork. So it will tell you that what we are doing is, what the information I'm giving is based on guesswork, not on data. Maybe it's just for reference purposes only. So that is one key thing that should happen. Build it from ground up. Government involvement, individual also involvement, ensuring that whatever we do, we ensure that we tag the country and
education. Just something big. Okay, so I asked Meta AI,
yeah,
how many smallholder farmers are there
in Ghana? Yes.
Just based on what you said.
Yeah.
And then it says, estimating the exact number of smallholder farmers in Ghana is challenging. And you are saying it's challenging because we have not uploaded
it. We have not. Imagine we had a data set. What did you just reference it?
It says, mm-hmm, but various initiatives have reported significant numbers. For instance, mm-hmm, Yara Ghana's Limited's Grow Ghana initiative has benefited over 111,609 smallholder farmers.
Where is it? It's speaking from a report.
So if Yara has done a report, yes, and has put its it on, yes, program there, yeah, it says, oh, that one has benefited this number of people.
And this, so is, if,
please continue.
This is just a small subset of it. So imagine it was speaking from the central data point, which is has to do with the government agency. That would have been more accurate because Yara's program they did was just a specific for specific people in a specific location,
exactly,
so direct and indirect jobs, etc. And it's not representative of the entire, but if we have that, what AI would have done was just reference based on Ministry of Food and Agriculture's 2024
authoritatively,
yes, the source, 2024 farmer census data. They are social to give you all the breakdown of, if you like, change and try how many farmers are there in the US and you see the kind of data points that you get from it.
But let me read the conclusion that AI, yeah, gave just to see why this, yes, data issue is so important.
Yeah.
It says overall, while there isn't a single definitive figure for the number of smallholder farmers in Ghana,
yeah,
all these stats I'm giving you, mm-hmm, just assures you that it's important to support them with how much, where, how. Okay, so I hope that I'm US.
Yes, how many commercial or whatever, it's even for South Africa, you can even get.
Okay, so let's go. There are approximately 1.9 million farms in the United States, with about 86% of them classified as small family farms. Mm-hmm. These family farms have a gross farm income below $350,000,
uh-huh,
operate on around 41% of the country's, uh-huh, agricultural land, and produce about 17% of the value of agricultural production.
Are you seeing the granular of data that it's giving you?
It's annoying. All right. I hope that in doing this, we are helping to,
yeah,
to deal with those who say, AI is this, AI is that, AI is for lazy, AI is this. I'm just,
yeah,
using,
yeah,
this,
yeah,
in seconds,
yeah,
as we have this conversation. Yes. All right, so let's see. South Africa, sadly, yeah, enough, they're as bad as us in this particular instance. Estimating the exact number of smallholder farmers
will be difficult. So see how all the African countries are not really up to the task. For US, it gave you even how much it contributes to their GDP.
How much land. The population.
Yes.
Everything. Key for decision, mm-hmm, making.
Yes.
Let's talk about this gap.
Yeah.
So, Black Coffee,
yes,
we are saying there's a gap between us, mm-hmm, and many of them. I did a conversation with Peace Quack, my friend in the Netherlands, mm-hmm, and she talked about the role of research.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Research. She works for a research,
yeah,
agency in agriculture in the Netherlands,
yeah,
and she was telling me the budget for research,
yeah,
the appetite for research, that's, and how well research is connected with the institutions, yeah, with the government, mm-hmm, and with the practitioners.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How can research help us to,
yes,
navigate our way around this?
So everything benchmarks on research. So if you take the more advanced countries, there's a significant amount of budget for research. And whatever data they produce feeds into the national database. So we can't run away from the research. So let's take our own research institution, Council for Scientific and Industrial Research. If we are to find out how much budget allocation even goes to them on an annual basis to do a lot of research, we'll be really disappointed. Because research is the one that drives a lot of these things. The research the academia, especially. So if, let's take, for example, even the final year students research they do for your project work. All of us did it. We call it in partial fulfillment of your whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
What happens to it? After that, they shelf it. Who has been able to convert this research into, let's say, soft copies, and then put them in some form of data that we can reference on? Yeah, every year, plenty of graduates pass out. But what they do is they're just doing their research just to get their degree, and then they move on.
Okay.
Some of them after two months even forgetting the research activity that they did. And these were key research points that they did. So academia, research institutions are more of the building block that feeds a lot of data into the national system. And then we can just build the AI solutions on it.
Okay. So in all this, others are using research.
Yeah.
Others are building databases. Yeah. Some argue that probably, for instance, let's do something like vertical farming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In countries that have limited land, they are saying vertical farming provides the way out so that land and the attendant pressure on food security doesn't become a limitation.
Yeah.
Let me quote Peter Diamandis, who says, AI will help us develop vertical farming to the point where we regain excess land focused on agriculture.
Yeah.
Not only will we feed more of the planet, but we also maintain its security for the future.
Yeah.
Let me make a bold submission.
Mm-hmm.
Can vertical farming, for instance, help us in reclaiming Galamsey land?
So if we take Ghana, for example, I think we have almost about 80% of our arable land is not cultivated. So clearly we don't have a land issue. Clearly.
We are too blessed
to be hungry. Clearly we don't have. So I think it's... And vertical farming, a lot of young people are now trying that out, aquaponics, hydroponics, etc., because is an inexpensive way. It's expensive, but it's more of a control system where you can do cultivation. For example, horticulture. I've seen a lot of people do lettuce, other vegetables, because all you need is mainly access to water and then a few other things. And then once you have the system in place. So I know a friend who does it, he's more automated when the water goes in, when it's even supposed to even do some form of spraying, et cetera, and it's working very well. For us, I think that would be a long shot because we'll be targeting most people in the urban areas. It's something that we can start with, but we do have a lot of arable land where I see AI playing a very key role has to do with information.
Okay.
That is information asymmetry. That is something that is very critical because let's take, for example, the amount of inputs that we use. If I ask annually how many tonnage of fertilizers we can't tell.
Okay.
What is the impact of these fertilizers on our land? Because they are inorganic fertilizers, they are synthetic. What is the impact of these on the land? And even, for example, we sell the same inputs across the country. Meanwhile, the lands are not the same. The land topographies are different. If you take southern sector, it's different from the northern sector. But you find the same.
Yeah, you can tell us which fertilizers you use.
Yes, south, exactly.
Which ones to use for the north, which ones to use for the front plate.
So let's assume a young person has come up with a soil testing kit that's using AI. The moment they put in the soil, they can tell, okay, this land here is deficient in, let's say, nitrogen. You don't need. So when you are blending fertilizers, you are not blending fertilizers specifically for a specific location. So that if you go to the north, because it's deficient in this, we need more of that. But here's one size fits all. The same fertilizer we sell across the entire country. So it will go to the south, it will work. It goes to the north, the pharmacy, and yeah, you sold us rubber fertilizers. So because we've not done a lot of testing to see differences in the... So that's what AI can do very well.
Let's look for some low-hanging fruits, because my guests, my listeners, my viewers are saying, okay, now that you've got the expert on, you sure are something that we can do, or something that's even working, so we can say, okay, at least now, which we can get on this bandwagon and do something in this AI. So let's say, I know some people are using drones, some people are using AI scarecrows. I mean, let's look for some low-hanging fruits.
So unfortunately, when it comes to AI, there are no low-hanging fruit per se, because whatever I do has come up with a certain cost.
Okay.
So what I would advise the young people, let's look at extension, for example.
Okay.
Farm extension service. The current extension service is the farmers is about one extension officer to about 2,000 farmers. It's huge. There's a big disparity. What these young people can do is, let's say one of the key things these people do is they go to the field. I remember very well when we had, about 4 years ago, when we had fall armyworm invasion that was attacking the maize, etc. There were a lot of information gap, so the farmers didn't know what to do. And some of the farmers who were working, they go to the supermarket, they buy this detergent. they buy the strong ones, like Soul Clean, etc. They put it in knapsack sprayers, add water, and then go spray the maize with it. Because somebody said it can kill it wasn't working. So let's say, assume you have built a solution where it can give even expert advisory services. Once you go to the field, you scan and say, okay, this is as a result of this infestation. Based on the various things, these are the things that you use to treat it. And then you tell the farmer that, okay, go buy ABC, and then you should treat it. You can do that for a service. Even the farmer is paying you one CD for that information. You are providing a service which is relevant. So you are removing the guesswork where you are not giving them accurate results for some of the activity. Because if you go to the farms and the maize is yellow, there are several research that show that if a maize is yellow, maybe it's deficient. It's a simple photograph, put it in your tool, can show you that this needs to be done. And the more you do, the more you get very accurate results. So those are some of the low-hanging fruits young people can look at in providing. So you might not be interested in primary production, but you're providing extension service to those who are producing.
Our clientele, our listeners and viewers, range from small to large to those in agritech and so on.
Yeah.
So let's explore some of the success stories that you may have seen in Ghana in terms of what people are doing with these technologies. Are there any examples of a few that you can point to and say, okay, these are
so
for them?
So yes, there are a few companies, there are a few people I know who are doing something quite significant. One, I'll go to, because I work in the grain sector, I'll go to the poultry sector, for example. There's a company called Agro Innova. So Agro Innova is run by a good friend of mine. It's called Moses. And he works largely with the poultry producers. And one of the key things is that he's built a platform that, one, allows farmers to be able to sell their birds. Two, that's what we call price discovery. So you can actually tell what the prices of poultry is across even the feed, if you're looking for feed to buy. It does something we call proximity matching. So let's say I'm here, I need to know where a feed producer is. I go on the app, it shows me just like how when I'm booking Uber, it shows me the available...
The nearest
cars. So it shows that, okay, within about 15-mile radius, there's somebody selling because he's been able to map them onto his system. So once you're here, you're able to see who are selling what and doing other things. So those are the key interesting things. But the AI adoption is still gradual. A lot of the technology we have are still the bolt-on technologies that people are using. It works. It's low-tech. It's working voice, SMS, web, mobile applications. But when it comes to FAX, for example, I'll use AgroCenter also. One of the key things we do what we call credit score analysis for smaller farmers. We pick a lot of data of farmers' activities all year round, and then we model that into a credit score. So the banks, the financial institutions we work with, look at this data and say, okay, this farmer is less risky, this farmer is higher risk. Even where your farm is located, we map that using what we call polygon mapping. So if you're located, let's say, close to a river bank, an insurance company will say, once it floods, your farm might be flooded. So even if we give you inputs, it might be a challenge. So we use all this data to now.
See, we mean AgroCenter.
So AgroCenter now is able to build a lot of key data sets on smaller farmers where you have a single. So let's say a farmer wants financing from a bank. A farmer must meet about 10, out of the 10 data sets or the data points, the farmer must score about minimum of 5. We look at your average income, farm location, dependency, agricultural data, even transactional data. We take a lot of those things. So once we get out, the farmer scores, let's say about 6, we say, okay, just like how it happens in the more advanced countries where they call your credit score, etc. The farmer now has a credit score, mainly because of the various data of activities that we pick.
So who are your clients? Is it the farmers or the banks?
So the banks are our clients, the farmers are our users. So those who pay us good money are the banks, insurance companies, development partners. So we work with some of the people, MasterCard Foundation, one of the people we work with. So for the farmer, they will not pay you. But when you're developing a solution, you should find out that the farmer becomes a user. They are the inputs of the data.
Okay.
The one who is looking to pay and use to finance the farmers are those enterprises that you have to approach. So it's always beneficial that you don't burden farmers with costs for the solution you are building, but then the other service players who need this data very much and they are willing to pay to be able to use your service to be able to deploy capital.
Close your eye for a minute as you close and imagine the Ghana you would like to see with all that you've learned about AI and what it can do, the kind of world that AgroCenter is dreaming about and that Black Coffee is dreaming about.
Yeah.
And just describe it to us and tell us how all of us can contribute in a small way to make it happen. This should be an easy thing for you.
Yeah. For me, I want to see a country that is, we are an agricultural country, and that shouldn't be taken for granted. And there's a reason why God put us here, where I always tell people that if you put a seed from the northern part or to the southern part of the country, the seed will grow. If I go to the beach side and plant maize, it will grow. We've seen commodities grow in weird places in the country here. So there's a reason why God put us in this area where we have this. I want to see a country where agri becomes one of our biggest revenue drivers. We have a lot of young people who we've engaged. I want people to see doing agri is not a second choice. In most cases, when we go to, and it starts from secondary school, it's fine, but I want to go and do science. And then you don't get that, go and do agri science. And then they come out and they are not proud of what's. I want to see a lot of young people finish agri college. And as proud as those who go to the bar, when people pass to the bar, we see a lot of photo shoot on social media. When have you seen people pass from agri college do photo shoot before? None. I want to see that same pride.
Let's be a sponsor.
Yes, let people be proud of what they've learned so that they know that this is something that is going to feed them. Because as you mentioned, food security is a very big topic now. The advanced countries are looking for countries where they have arable land. I've seen a lot of inroad into Ghana with some big organizations who are doing vertical, reverse. They do what we call, they do backward integration farming. Some who are doing production are now having their own farms. I've seen people produce yellow maize for feed markets in China and their Chinese companies.
5 years from now, 10 years from now, close your eye. What do you want to see?
5 years from now, to see a self-sufficient country where agriculture is the biggest revenue driver for the country.
His name is Black Obi. His real name, Francis Obi Crown. He's been with me for the past hour, helping us to understand how artificial intelligence can totally revolutionize agriculture and create an integrated production system that has several routes permeating other sectors and creating a fuller experience, one that we are all a part of. But he says, for that to happen, Charlie, we need to go to the primary data sets and make serious inputs into that area, from government to individuals to even your own social media posts. Target properly, and you are contributing to building the primary data.
Yes. Thank you very much.
So this is Springboard Adventure University, just dancing around AI for the past few weeks and trying to make it more understandable, palatable to you. And I hope that these conversations have helped break down the subject to you, demystify it, and take away any misconceptions you may have about artificial intelligence and how it can help you live a more efficient life. My name is Albert Okran, thanking you on behalf of the Springboard Roadshow Foundation.